This is Clint Locklear from Trapping Across America, and I have what I have come to determine is a crazy person on the other end of the phone, but today he is my hero. Now, Casey, why would you think that I think you're a crazy person?
Probably because I made a living riding bulls, probably.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I asked you before we got on here if you knew, who'd you say this guy's name was?
Tough Peterman.
Yeah, and I was listening to Marcus and them interview him, and just got his face smashed up, and then he's 6 weeks later, he's riding at the Nationals, and I mean, it's just insane. And you said that you were on the same level and you used to hang out with him.
Yes, sir. I've spent a lot of time in the gambling halls with him, for sure. Never seen a man that could lose so much money.
Well, do you know that you're probably my hero tonight? Do you know why?
Why is that?
Well, I got a text from my CPA. He said he gave me a reminder that my corporate tax is due next week. So I have spent all day making sure all my T's are crossed and I's are dotted for the internal extortionist service. And then my wife gets home, my brain's fried. She puts on football and she's crossing back between that and tennis, of all things, because she's a sports nut. And now we can come out here and talk about bobcats, coyotes, and mountain lions. Now, how cool is that?
Well, that's pretty cool right there. So that's a lot better than the tax man, I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah. So that's why you're my hero. You're giving me some sanity tonight, brother.
All right. Well,
so I'm going to...
Right back at you.
So you're from, what, New York, Massachusetts?
No, New Mexico.
That's about the same, isn't it?
No, it ain't nowhere near the same.
Okay, now you're obviously a cowboy, and you're from New Mexico, and you do predator control, and you fur trap too. Okay, and now one of the things we're going to talk about tonight, which I'm so glad you've done this, because we talked on the phone the other day. I think Cindy's been looking at some places so I can come out and do this. But you've got mountain lions in New Mexico, and they're now legal to trap. Isn't that right?
That's right. It may just be the next couple of years. They're putting a lot of money against it at the moment, trying to put a suit to stop it.
And you're set it up, the way I understand this, where you're going to take people out and give an opportunity to trap some mountain lions.
Yes, sir. I had so many phone calls about it, I decided that we'd just, there's no way for me to guarantee somebody a lion. I've set for them the next day, you got them, and I've got one I've been chasing for 3 years and still ain't caught him.
Well, anybody that comes out there should understand that. I mean, that's not like you're trying to catch a coon.
Yes, sir. And then I'm on private land, all of it, a couple of 3 million acres that I have permission to trap. And I've gathered cattle with them, and, the owners, they have me just treat it like it's mine. If I see a sick cow or something, I call them or help them or however it is. But I can't just turn somebody loose in on that. So that means if they're going to come try, they're going to have to be with me. So basically, they're going to wind up getting coyote and bobcat instructions out of the deal. So I decided to just offer the instructions with the chance of catching a lion.
I think that's awesome. I mean, I really do. I mean, because I can tell you, we had a guy come down to our trapping school. He wanted to catch a bobcat. Before he ever caught a bobcat, he caught a 100-pound female lion. And he's been runt ever since.
I bet he has.
Because, I mean, where do you go from there?
Well, so, it wears off after a while, I can tell you that, but...
About catching,
it's still pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, well, for one, you're dealing with something. If you played your card wrong, it could possibly do some damage to you, and that's always a little bit of the exciting part.
Especially when they're in the number three long spring and it's already all bent up. You're just hoping you don't come out of it at the wrong time.
Well, I imagine. So, just for, if someone's listening to this, what is the issue with the ranch? What do they do on the ranches that the ranchers would care if you got rid of them or not?
Well, for one, you know, the cattle market was good for a few years, but most years it's not a get-rich thing. And the mule deer hunting has become a big money thing. I mean, there's some $10,000 bucks running on them ranches. And there's gotten to be so many lions that the deer population has really been hurt. So that's the first reason they want them gone. And then they will kill yearling cattle and calves, yearling colts, and tear up good saddle horses.
Well, are they similar to bobcats as far as territory? I mean, I know they have bigger, but I mean, do the females hang around and the males roam around? Is it very similar with that with the mountain lions?
Yes, very similar.
Have you seen any type of like people always talk about cycles, which I've found not to be true with cats? But is it small cats, bobcats? Does it seem like the males, is it like on a week or two or month before you see tracks again, or how does that work?
You know, like a cat's a cat when you go to, just like a bobcat, he may make a cycle and come through every week for 6 months, and then all of a sudden he comes through every day for some reason.
Mm.
So they're really hard. I wouldn't say they're on a cycle, because if a bird flutters over there, then they're off of their little path, and then they may just change paths after that.
Well, that's kind of what I've learned with bobcats, which I always hear people say, like, you know, every 7 days they come around, you know, and it's never made that, it never seems that way with the bobcats. But when I listen to the guys talk about mountain lions, maybe not just trapping, when you watch the shows, their territory is so freaking big. It's hard to imagine that you can really lock them down about where they're going to go.
Well, the easiest way is I got a bunch of permission on the Pecos River, and then I've got permission up on Cap. They're going to follow that river, and you find the pinch points in it, just like you would a bobcat. And up on the Cap, they're going to follow the edge of it, and then you find a spring down there where it's tough to get to. And they'll always come drink there for some reason. They're not real big on going up the water tanks like coyotes and bobcats would do. They seem to kind of shy away from them.
I can see that. Because, you know, come to think of it, I don't think I've ever seen, in Texas, I've never seen a lion track around one of the tanks. And I never put those two together.
No, sir, you can follow them down the road and they'll be going to one and they'll go out around it. Something about them windmills and them man-made pumps and stuff. They just, unless they just have to go get a drink there, I very rarely see a track at one.
Now, how long have you been chasing cats?
Oh, I probably got serious when I started doing the ranch work and getting paid for it. That was kind of part of the deal.
Okay. Because when I was out New Mexico, man, it was... The game wardens were like, we want you to trap the cats, but you can't kill the cat in the trap. But if you turn it loose and shoot it, and you have a hunting license, then you're legal.
Yes, sir.
Now, the first time that I was up around the, Magdalena Peak outside of Las Cruces, when them big males crossed the road, there was no way I was turning one of them things loose. I mean, my brain couldn't even comprehend the size of that. And I bet it jumped like 20 feet across the road. I mean, it was not like a bigger bobcat.
Well, now imagine him and that number 3 long spring that's already been up, just barely holding the jaw is. And you gotta walk up to him. Yeah. It'll bring you some excitement, I promise you that.
Oh, I bet. Well, how long you been doing predator trapping altogether, Casey?
I've been trapping coyotes since I was 8 years old. I was taught by an old timer in a wheelchair that trapped out of a Subaru station wagon looking thing. It was real low to the ground. He had long handled tools. He trapped a lot of the same ranches we'll be trapping this winter, but he'd just go down in two tracks, open his door, and throw a set in right at the edge of the two track.
From the car?
From the car. He never touched the ground because, of course, he was in a wheelchair. So when I was learning to trap at 8 years old in front of him, I'd have to kneel down between the door and the car there and be making a set. If I ever touched the dirt, and I mean, I had these rubber gloves on that you couldn't even hardly bend your hands in. But if I ever went to scoop up dirt and put it in the sifter with my hand or something, I'd get whacked in the back of the head.
Old school teacher.
Old school. You'd be able to not touch the dirt with your hands, touch it with your trowel, or put it in the sifter and put it on the trap. Now I break every rule he ever taught me.
But that's that's just the way everybody went about it back then.
Right. Yes, sir. They just, a bunch of them myths, and they believed them, and that's the way it was.
Now, I have to admit, though, Casey, for a fat guy like me, I would love to see how someone set out of a car, because that seems like a plan.
Well, like I said, he had the controls to the gas and stuff up here on the steering wheel like a motorcycle.
Okay.
Or off the steering column, anyways. So he'd just pull up there and throw the door open, and his trowel and his hammer had about 2 foot handles on them. And he was a big fella himself, so he'd just lean out the edge of there and put them in, and then we caught one, he'd pull up and throw that door open right there in the catch circle. Reach out there with his trowel and nose tap him. And you've seen the guys break the foxes' necks before?
Mm-hmm.
That's how he killed coyotes.
From inside the car?
From inside the car. He'd nose nap them, grab whatever he could of them, pull them up there and grab them by the mouth and line their neck up and snap, take them out of the trap, and with one hand swing them up on top of that Subaru. That little rack up there. So you always knew how good a day you had by how much blood was running down the windows of that thing.
What year was this? He'd be put in jail today.
Yes, he would. It was, let's see, I was born in 78, so 84, 85, something like that.
Wow.
No, it was just a common thing for Mr. Ernest to come into town with a pile of coats on top of the Subaru.
Well, I learned the cow neck-breaking thing from O'Gorman, and it's pretty simple on Fox. And then out west, that's how I do it too. So I mean, that's pretty easy. When I got back in the east and these really big dogs, man, I ain't got the strength for that. You know, I had to give that up pretty quick. But that, I mean, he was pulling them. I mean, the way that I was taught to do it is you lay them flat, you spread their legs out after you tap their nose, and then you grab their muzzle and you push down and out. How was he doing that in a car?
He was doing it by holding them by the scruff of their back, right in between their shoulders. He would grab that hide and line it up and do the same thing, but he's not using the ground, so it's all hand strength. He's pulling up with one and down with the other.
Oh, my word.
And do it so fast it'd scare you.
I bet your only words to him were yes, sir, no, sir, wasn't it?
You betcha. Yes, sir.
So what type of sets was he setting out of the car? His basic flat sets, I'm assuming?
Flat sets and dirt hose. In the fall of the year, he would start with dirt hose with that long-handled trowel. He'd dig him one. And then come about December the 15th, he'd go all the flat sets. Still basically the same system I use now.
That's cool. And out of the car, I'm trying to visualize this in my mind. So out of the car, he digs the hole, and I'm sure he moves the... Is it real sandy where you're at?
It is, but most of them ranches he was trapping, as same as today they will be, they either run a grader or a bulldozer along the road, so they throw that little edge up on there, and he just trapped in them with his dirt hose.
Okay. Well, how did he bed the trap? Just push it in He's using long springs, I assume, to help him with the stability.
He's using long springs. He had some number four jumps that he made me start with. And I asked him later, why did I have to start with them? He said, because I couldn't find any other use for them, so I made you use them.
That's all right.
And I still have them to this day. There's a dozen of them hanging on the fence. That's just something I'll never get rid of.
I can imagine that, yeah. Well, that's pretty amazing. And
every now and then I'll grab one down and go catch a coyote in it just to let it see some fur.
Well, you know, when I got back from Alaska, I bought a lot of number threes and fours from Art up in Wisconsin, Trapper Art. And every year I still do the same thing. I'll always take two or three with me when I go somewhere, and I'll catch something. I'll put them away. They're not as efficient, but there's something about that. Using a trap like that that you've always used, even though it's not the best, it just, there's a lot of pride involved.
There is. It takes you right back to that memory of when you... Sometimes I lose the drive to get out there and work as hard as you have to work to catch as many coats as a guy needs to catch these days. And something as simple as that, grabbing one of them old traps or one of his old three ends or something, and it gives you a little more get up and go and drive and want to.
Now, what being that old school, what was he using, lure, or was he using urine and droppings, or what was he using?
He would use a little bit of lure. He was a big bait guy and then dirt hose.
Smart man.
And he was one of those guys that would find a roadkill or something and tie it on behind that car and drag it along with him. Just as old school as you can get. You read them old books about it, that was him.
That's pretty cool. So did you have anybody else, or was that kind of like your main teacher and you just went with it after that?
That was my main teacher and I just went with it. And of course, later videos. I've probably watched every video that ever come out. If nothing else, for entertainment. It ain't no different than going to town and buying a movie and watch. At least this is something about what you like, whether you learn it or not.
That's true. Very true.
But you can always learn something from everybody. I took a 12-year-old kid with me last winter for about 2 weeks. He taught me more than I thought I taught him. Because they just look at it from a different perspective.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt. There's a couple of things on that. Slim Peterson, I've heard him say before at a convention, because, I mean, you're on the same side of the table now that I am at conventions. So
yes, sir.
You hear a lot of guys, you know, they'll say stuff and talk to you and different things. And I've heard Slim Peterson say, you know, you can learn something from everybody. You just got to figure out how to get it out of them, of the important stuff, you know. And that's always stuck with me. And then there was another time, Casey, that I was given a school for the USDA down in Florida, and we were actually doing otter. And strange as that sounds, there's a lot of goldfish, commercial goldfish things down in otter in Florida that they were having otter problems. They'd go in and kill all the goldfish, and these are like real expensive goldfish. But they can't use traps, so we had to teach them how to snare. And they sent me a guy at one of these schools that has never trapped or snared anything. All he knew how to do was use cages on hogs. That is it. And he watched me show how I did the body grips if they got the permits and with the circle triggers. And then when we got all said and done, he came and he kind of like took me over to the side and he goes, well, if they're going through that square and you've got that circle in the middle with the bullseye triggers, why don't you just bend you a big piece of that number 9 wire and put a little support off there and then put your snare in the middle and it'll act the same way. Now, I would have never thought of that, but with him not knowing anything, it just made perfect sense, and he was absolutely right.
Yeah, it was just common sense to him, wasn't it?
It was, because he didn't have any of the, you know, the other stuff that, you know, eventually we all get where we think we know what it's supposed to be like.
Right, and then when you start the old school, even though you start breaking all them and figure out you can do this and that, you're still in that frame of mind when you look at something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all, yeah.
When you bring somebody in with no experience in it, they just look at it, especially if they got some common sense, they just look at it like this and ask you, well, why are you doing it like that, dummy? It's easier this way. Yeah, so...
Well, I know I've learned something from about every person I've gave instruction to. You know, some of it's small, some of it's big, but it all pays off. So were you trapping when you were being a cowboy and being a rodeo guy? Or did that kind go to the side?
I would trap all week long and head to rodeos on the weekends. And then, of course, when I was in the PBR, you'd fly out on Thursday and be home on Monday.
What made you want to do that? I mean, if God wanted someone to ride a bull, they'd have made a saddle on them.
Well, I always figured God gave me the talent to do it, so he meant for me to do it.
That's way more guts than me, man. I mean, kudos to that, I think.
Well, it's the only thing that you face defeat more than you do when... it's just plain and simple. You're not going to ride all of them. I think my best year I rode 60%.
Is that a pretty good percentage for professional riders?
Yeah, the guys that win the world are riding 62%. Guys that are making the finals and winning a lot of money, some of them are only riding 28%. They're just riding the big money ones. And
so what?
Bull riding is rather simple, but it's all in your head. You're facing something that'll kill you every time you nod your head. So, in your subconscious, when you're right and you're on the money, I call it being sharp. It's easy.
And do you look?
And why you can't be like that every week, I don't know, but you can't.
Well, I can, yeah. Well, you do have a 2,000-pound, pissed-off, small-brained animal that's trying to hurt you. So, I mean, they're going to have something to say with that.
Yes, they are.
Now, do you
have to learn to harness that fear and use it as an energy versus if it ever gets in your subconscious mind that he's going to hurt you or you can't ride him, then that's exactly what's going to happen.
Has that somehow crossed over in the way that you think about trapping or other things in life?
Yes, sir, it has turned my whole life that way. 7 years ago, I broke my neck. It ended me. And I was winning lots of money and had cattle in four different states. Thought I was a big cattle baron. And when I broke my neck, everything fell apart. And I just had to go back to remembering what it was to try. But you're capable of doing anything you want to do. You just got to be willing to pay the price to do it.
Dude, you need to make a t-shirt with that saying on there.
Yeah. When you figure that one out, then you got to remind yourself of that sometimes. Just, if you want to do it bad enough, you can do it. Just be willing to pay the price for it.
That's pretty awesome.
So I put that towards trapping. When I get out there and I get burnt out, you know, 6 weeks straight of it, hammering every day, I just tell myself, well, I could be sitting in an office somewhere making $12 an hour, barely paying the bills.
Well, I mean, that's definitely one way to look at it. So when you're on these ranches, how big are these?
Well, I think the smallest one's probably 32 sections. The rest of them go up to 150 sections.
Okay, for us guys in the east, what's that in acreage? Without me pulling out my calculator.
Well, that's 643 acres to the section, so 100 of them, 64,000 acres.
Lord have mercy.
So some of them big ranches are over 100,000 acres.
Okay, now we're going to get to some fun stuff. How do you, let's say that... you're going to a new ranch you've never been on. and you're going through the gate, what is in your mind? How do you set 50 or 100,000 acres? I mean, what is it when do you drive around? Do you look at maps? I mean, how do you try to figure that out?
The easiest way I've found is you buy the ranch hand a case of beer and tell him, get in the pickup, let me help you do your chores right quick. And when you get his chores done, you get him in the pickup and you tell him, show me around. You'll learn all the roads that circle instead of go up there and dead end.
Okay.
You'll just get to see the whole ranch without you being in your own pickup thinking you're going to stop and put a set in that hot location. Because it never fails. You can tell yourself, I'm just going to drive around today. But when you have the gear and stuff, it's hard to drive past a hot location with a smoking sign on it.
Right.
But that thing may be a dead end. So it's better, even if you can't get a ranch hand, than leave your gear at home and just drive around for a day. Look it over. Figure out where the draws come in, because in my experience with coyotes, they're going to follow the draws. You can get up on the ridges and catch them, but at some point they're coming through a draw. If you can find where two or three draws are coming together, you can save a lot of miles and just go set that up pretty heavy.
So you're looking at the flow of the land. That's kind of how you're picking locations?
Yes, sir. Yeah, if tracks and droppings are there, that's a good thing. If not, if everything flows together right there and I think a coyote's going to be there, I'm putting a set in anyways.
See,
after years of trapping them, you kind of learn where they're going to go, I guess.
Right, right. Well, see, most of the trappers are in the east, Casey, which I'm sure you know. And when they hear of a place that big, it's mind-blowing. I mean, the biggest I've ever been on is 70. And it was, you know, I could drive 3 hours and never hit the fence. You know, I mean, it was hard for me to get a grasp on. But what you just said, even for the east, I think is pretty important. And a lot of guys, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but just because you have location, you still need to see that sign.
Yes, sir. Especially if you're not familiar with the area, then set on sign. If you've been there and you know that a coyote can cut across there, then I'll probably set it up if I'm driving right by. But
now, are you like a one set type trapper? Or do you gang set when you get out of the truck, or
I gang set when I get out of the truck.
Okay,
unless it's a feature out by itself, like a single tree in the middle of 10 sections, I always go to it and put one set in. And you'll be amazed at how many big male coyotes you pick up off of that one set.
You're about the third person that mentioned the tree out in the middle of nothing out west. So there must really be something to that. My question is, why don't you go plant more trees so you can have more sets?
Well, I think if you plant more trees, it wouldn't work. It's just a salient feature out there by itself, and I don't know what it is, but them old big males are going to go around and check it. But for the most part, I stick to the draws. It's easy setting. You're down there in the bottom with plenty of location. You got your stock dams and all that you can sit on. And you can get through the country a lot easier without tearing up a pickup. When you go to trying to get on them ridges and them out-of-way spots, yeah, you'll catch some coyotes there, but eventually, within a two-week period, he's going to come through that draw. So I'm big on letting the coyotes come to me instead of me having to go to them.
Now, are you getting down in the draws, or are you sitting on the edge?
On the edges of them.
Okay. That's when I was out in New Mexico, that was the big shock to me. Because all the books always have everybody going down in the draws, but there was always more sign on the outside of it, right on the edge.
Yes, sir. I will put a set in the bottom, especially in rougher country where a cat can come through. He's going to be down there in that soft sand normally.
Well, cool deal. And you say you set both dirt holes and flat sets.
Yes, sir.
What's a quick rundown of the Casey average what he sets more than anything type dirt hole?
Just a standard messy kind of dirt hole. It's not going to have a real big hole, but I'm going to move a lot of earth and knock me a chunk out of one of them embankments. I like to set a dirt hole in an embankment, just the way I was taught, I guess, and it works, so that's the way I stick with it. I guess if you had to call it something, it'd be a big, messy, Charlie Robbins-style dirt hole.
Okay, okay. So you like them big and ugly?
Yes, yeah, sir. Even on flat sets, I've showed it in the last few demos. If I can't perfectly blend it back in, then for about a 6-foot circle there, I'm going to tear up some ground and make it look like a catch circle already. That way I can blend in that one spot.
Mm-hmm.
Once you already got him kind of in the area, it's okay. But if you just got one little spot over your trap, you're going to have a hard time catching coats.
Absolutely. See, that's one of the things, the biggest things that I've had trouble getting across to students is the fox sweet spot thing, you know, and coyotes just don't seem to like it at all. So when you're out, do you ever, you look at Google Maps or use any type of technology when you're doing that, or are you staying old school too?
I'm staying old school. I'll pull up that Google Maps stuff and look at it and think, well, that's all fine and well, but until I put my tires on the ground and my feet on the ground, I really don't know what's there. So I don't waste a lot of time looking at it on the computer. I'd rather get in the pickup and just go look at it.
Now, what are you using? You said number threes. Are they long springs too?
I still use a lot of number three and four long springs. In New Mexico, we got a 6.5-inch jaw limit, 7-inch if it's laminated. Anything over 5.5 inches has to be offset. So that's just some information for some guys that are going to come for lessons and bring their own gear. I use a lot of number four dupes, and I'm best friends with Tom Bodette, and I get them coat cuff jaws and put in them.
Well, if anybody hadn't heard that, I mean, you and Chip go into that in, like, great detail on a back issue of Trapping Radio.
Yes, sir. That was all we talked about, was that that trap, making it dogless. He was determined he was going to make a dogless trap out of it. He did it, got it done.
I tell you what, Chip's amazing. I feel bad for him sometimes because I'll call him up with the craziest stuff. Sometimes it's on trapping, sometimes it's on farming, sometimes it's on anything that just pops in my head. You know, and we'll start bouncing around ideas, and before long, he's got some type of solution.
Yes, sir. I use him the same way.
Do you?
Sometimes I do it just to fluster him for a day, and he'll call back. So I don't know what the heck you're talking about.
Yeah,
I don't know either. So.
So you're using the dukes with the cow. Are you beefing up the springs?
On the coats, I'm not. I'm just running the way it comes. That's why I like the number four duke. It comes with that center locator for a swivel. And it's got the four coil already, so I'm just popping the jaws out, sticking the coat cuff jaws in, putting a Miles trigger in it, or putting a positive trip pan on it.
Okay, okay. Because, you know, in my mind, when I was out there, now I don't... Now, please don't take this wrong, Casey, and I don't know exactly what it's like where you're trapping, but when I was in the high desert around Las Cruces, I really couldn't see a reason to have an overly powerful trap. The ground was pretty easy. You know, the animals weren't like super big, you know, and it was easier to deal. Because the first time I've ever touched a number three Sleepy Creek standard two-jaw, round-jaw trap, Ed had a bunch of them. And I was very nervous with them without being four coil, but they did so fine out there in that soil. I was stumped, to be honest with you, because I'd grab my traps and they're all four coil and stuff like that. And do you have to deal with snow and frozen ground where you're at?
Yes, sir. Not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot.
You know,
okay.
Some of these ranches would be on this winter, they're at 6,000 feet. I'm up here on the high plains where you were on the high desert down there. We get a little colder weather, but it's here for a day or two and gone, and we're back to kicking dry dirt again.
Okay, okay.
Now, it's a lot like, you know, I've been trapping a ranch down there at Laredo we talked about last season. It's a lot like trapping there. The same kind of sand in spots, and then you got rocky stuff where you can't even dig a bed in the next spot. 10 feet over, it's 6 foot of drift sand. So you can always pick a softer spot to put a set in.
Anybody listening to the show, he just gave you a massive point. Pick a good spot.
I mean, yeah, don't sit there with a jackhammer trying to put a trap bed in when you can go 10 feet and on the same travel way and have easy digging.
Oh, yeah. That was one thing that I remember over and over again when I was out at Craig's the first time. Was he would look at he would get out and look around, and if it was hard digging, he would just go somewhere else. And you know, me being young and you know, all that at that time, I didn't quite understand that. But at 47, he had a lot more wisdom than I realized.
Yes, sir. Yeah, there's no point in breaking your back when you can go. Even if it's a quarter of a mile down the road, the cow's probably still going to be on the same trail. So
yeah, absolutely. Now, are you staking or are you dragging out there, Casey?
I still carry rebar stakes. I use 3/8 so I can drive it around the caliche rock underneath the sand. I use a 24-incher and a 16-incher, and I cross-peg everything. I have tried every disposable there is, and you'll get in that old caliche rock. With the ones that sit on the outside, it'll curl that up and you're not getting your driver back. On the ones that sit on the inside, that cleat will fall down in there and make a wedge and you're not getting your driver back.
Well, unless someone's been out there, they really don't know what you're talking about, but that is some nasty stuff.
Boy, you get in that cleat rock and... So, I'm real big on drags. I bought 10 dozen from Chip the other day, and boy, them are some. You can catch a coyote in the Walmart parking lot, and if he hits a crack in the asphalt, he's stuck.
That's right. Yeah, good drag is amazing.
Boy, them are good ones. So I've went to more and more of them. I guess as you get older, you get tired of swinging that hammer, and it's easier to just throw that drag in the bush.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So on your cat sets, are you doing kind of the same thing, or do you have a specific cat style set that you do?
No, I get really gaudy cat trapping, like a 10-year-old. Had a lot better luck with it. Like on them line sets, you make a pin set in the brush. You get in there and haul a little more brush in and make you a pin set. Put your trap and give him one opening to go through. Lots of eye appeal in there, nose appeal. I'll probably use 3 or 4 different lures and a bait at every cat set.
You mean bobcat or mountain lion or both?
Both.
Both.
I treat them all the same. The bobcats, lions, you're going to catch them in the same sets.
So you don't change your trap placement for the size of the line?
I'm backing out a little, or in them pin sets. If I see lion sign there and I know I need to catch lion there, it's a different deal than what guys that come with me this winter, they'll have to go by the rules. I'm a paid ADC guy. So as soon as they pay me to control predators on that ranch, I no longer have rules. I can use a bear trap if I want to.
Right.
So if I'm after lions, I'm using a little bigger trap. I'm having one killing, and I've got to go catch him.
What do you
back to what you said about the stoutness of traps and why I run what I do. When I'm just fur trapping, you can come out here and catch coats and one and a halves all day long. If you know where to put that trap, make him step there. That's really all you got to have. We don't have a great big coat. But when you got one killing and you're getting paid to catch him, it's a different story. You want something that'll hold him until he expires, if that's the case.
Amen.
So that's why I'm not in the tiny trap club, I guess.
Oh, let's not get that started again. So what are you using on the lines? Is it a new house of some kind? Are you going to a beaver style trap or Minnesota? Or what are you using?
Well, I have several of the new house 14s and 114s.
Woo.
And then the livestock protection traps, I have several of them. If I'm going after a lion that's killing, it's going to have teeth. I had Rodney make me some of the 85s. What are they called?
The TS-85s?
Yeah, the TS-85s. He laminated it from jaw post to jaw post, put an offset in it and put teeth in it, put four of the big main springs on it. I have to have setters to set the dang thing.
Mm.
Only weigh 170 pounds, and I can jump up and down on it and can't get it set without setters.
Well, let me recommend something for you. I'll give you the secret to my petiteness. It's Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Ben and Jerry's will make a man out of everybody. Minimum 250, 300.
I think I'll just carry my setter so I can still get up and down the trail and get them set. I admire you big casinos to get out there and trap as hard as y'all do and move as fast as you do.
We got no
choice. Because I was always at 145, and when I went to 170, I can't even wear a trophy belt buckle holder anymore without it hitting my belly.
Well, you'll never see a fat guy wearing one of them great big old belt buckles like y'all wear out there. You'd cut your belly button off.
I know why now. Like, I'll go on a diet, though. When I get to where I can't see the root of it, it's time to get on a diet.
Well, so have you got to use the TS-85s? That's interesting that you've done that.
I have.
In the lab?
They don't bend them. They don't. It's the perfect trap if you got a lion killing and can use it. You know, in Texas, you can use it on lions, too, so...
Well, I mean, I've never really modified something for a lion or a wolf, for that matter. I've never been around wolves, but except for Alaska, but I wasn't really trapping for them. When I was down in Texas, we got on some jobs where we had to trap hogs, but they wouldn't go in cages anymore because the ranch owns, like, you know, half the company stock from somewhere, and the hogs know everything about the cage. And then the helicopters in the hill country of Texas, like where Mark June's moved to, those hogs have learned to get in those deep ravines and the helicopters can shoot them. And then we had to figure out how to catch them. And, you know, we played around with 330s, which is actually pretty effective. And then snares, of course. And then I was going with the number five Bridgers because that's what I had with me. I just had some with me. But those bigger traps that were set for beaver, and see, I've never really thought about TS-85 for the same thing. Once I got above about a 250-300 pound hog, they would break the tips off the jaws, and I had them welded, but they would shear them off. But you're not seeing that, because if I'm not mistaken, doesn't the TS-85 have rivets?
It is riveted in, yes sir. Yeah.
And you hadn't seen any issues with that at all?
No, because he's taking them out and putting bolts in them.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I should have mentioned that when I said he laminated it from jaw post to jaw post with 1/4-inch square. And then he drilled out the rivets and put bolts in them.
I bet that is a nice trap set. You know, because that thing beds pretty good.
It beds like a sheet of plywood. You just really got to be careful. There's no cattle in the pasture or something, or try to keep something hanging over it to keep the deer out of it. Because when you put teeth in it, you're holding whatever gets in it.
Absolutely. Have you ever played with the foot snares at all?
I have. I've done a lot of live market trapping. And I started using the foot snares on coats. I'm the one that got Chip all fired up about it last year.
Well, you did a good job of it then.
Yeah, he got fired up, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
They work great. I've got some of the 8-inch Beasleys. My only problem is them lines twist. They're about like putting a 200-pound otter in a trap is what they're like.
Oh. So
they will lay down and just roll. So that cable, you've got to run a really heavy cable. And I just had better luck using foot traps to catch them.
Okay. Well, is it like a, I'm not familiar with a Beasley. Is it like a Belisle's? Is there a way you could add extra swivels if you had to? Is it feasible?
I think you could. The problem is you're trapping them in rough country all the time. They're always getting wrapped up in something.
Okay.
Until you get ready to release him, and then all of a sudden he unwraps himself, and you got 16-foot catch circle to play with. Never fails.
Yeah, I've seen you walk around. I mean, the bulls were pretty rough on you, dude. I mean, I'm sure you can move when you need to, but, as fast as them things are, that'd be pretty scary.
Yes, sir, they have. My bulls hammered me, but when you get a cat jumping at you, you can move really fast. I can't believe I'll tell you this story, but I hope my wife ain't listening. Last year in Laredo, I caught a bobcat, and you know how everything there will stick you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's some cactuses that look like archoia, but they got a lot smaller joint and really fine needles. I don't know what you call them, but
I know what you're talking
about. I had a cat on the drag, and he jumped at me, and I jumped backwards, and that thing hit me in the back of the shoulder. And you can run your hand over it with some pressure, and you don't even feel them, but your shirt rubbing on it will just drive you crazy.
Yeah.
And I was there by myself. I couldn't sleep. So I get in the pickup. I go to Laredo. I stop at the Love's truck stop, and I go find the windshield washer guy. You know the guy running around for a buck, he'll wash your windshield?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you didn't know it, that man can tell you where anything and anything you want is in the whole city. So I tell him my problem. I said, look, I need a hooker. I don't want her for that reason. But I got a pair of tweezers here. And I'm going to pay her to take these pricklies out of me. So instead of me poking her, I need her to pull the pokies out of me. So that's what I did. And by golly, I went back to camp, got some sleep.
That's ingenuity right there. I love it.
Well, it was the only thing I could figure out. I didn't want the windshield washer guy sitting on me pulling out stickers. So.
Yeah, the cactuses, that's, I'm sure you're more used to them, but that, you're talking about a learning curve when I started going out west some. I mean, good grief. Everything y'all have out there is trying to make you bleed. Everything.
Yes, sir. And
I mean, here, I mean, you can walk through the woods unless you purposely run into a blackberry thicket or multiflora rose or something like that. You're pretty good to go.
You know, you talk about it like that. I went to Mississippi last year in live market coyotes, and them briars kicked my butt.
Well,
I got ate up more by the briars than I've ever got ate up by the cactus.
Well, I guess maybe I'm more used to them, but I mean, down there, I'd always back up and it would be, and I don't know what those little round cactus things are that they'll get broke up and you're like, you know, from animals or whatever, but they got little bitty fine ones, but they'll go through your leather glove.
And
you'll be down making a set and don't even know you're sticking yourself until you start feeling something in your hand. I mean, I'm just not used to anything like that.
And then skinning cats, they got them all in them.
Yes.
And then you piss your fur buyer off and you take them to him. He's great and he's got stickers all in him when he gets done. And he looks at you and says, I'm docking you for all these damn stickers in the hand.
Well, I sold cats twice to Grinwald's. They're from Illinois. I told him the cats were Texas. And the first time he popped that cat and I saw his hand moving towards him, I literally put my hand on him and said, I don't think you want to do that. And he looked at me real funny. And I'm like, these have mesquite in them and you're going to get hurt doing that. And he didn't believe me. He got halfway down one cat, you know, and he just gave me a look like, I can't believe you brought me a cat with that in there. You can't get it out.
No, especially in the leg areas. They're just solid in there.
So what was the difference when you went from New Mexico to Mississippi? What did you have to try to change around a little bit for to deal with a different environment like that?
You know, the first thing is you're on the side of a hill and you dig a trap bed and it fills up with water. Now, how in the heck does that happen? You're on the side of a hill. Water's supposed to seep down out of the ground. So I had to just go to lots of carrying dry dirt with me and peat moss. And
which you never probably have to do out in New Mexico, do you?
No, sure. No, it's very rare that I have to carry anything like that with me out here. And then the coyotes, you know, I was trapping both the Delta and the Timber Country on the deer hunting outfits.
Mm-hmm.
In the Delta, the coyotes are pretty thick. In the piney woods, there's not a lot of coyotes. But you can't tell them ranch owners or farm owners, whatever you want to call them, because if three coyotes go to howling down there in them old draws and stuff, it sounds like there's 100 of them down there.
That's right, yeah.
Well, there's only three coyotes on the whole dang outfit. Well, unless you're getting paid to go trap them hunting deals, you are not going to make any money.
Mm-hmm.
In Mississippi, anyways, in the piney woods.
Well, it's like
that. Get out on the. Go ahead.
It's like that anywhere, though, Casey. You come to Tennessee or Georgia or Alabama, all these places I went to, everybody wants to run to the big timber, the big, like the mountains, because it looks rugged. There's nothing there. I mean, there's nothing there for anything to eat. You know, there's no population there. You know, like, but if you were to get in the Delta around more of the agriculture in the real swampy areas where it's thick, you'd be surprised at the difference in population. Like where Chip's at, that's pretty good.
See, and I was right on the edge of it. I was in between. I was supposed to go stay with Chip, and he had a family member pass away, and he found me this camp to go to. And I can tell you it was really dark. I can tell you that.
Well, you know,
the little gas station where I ate at, I was the only white fella there. And we're talking good people. They're colored people, but
oh yeah,
90% of them are just as good as anybody.
Absolutely.
I got along with them just fine. But it is a culture shock when you go into something like that. Then, of course, you got the young ones that's got their pants sagging down and they're popping off remarks.
Oh, they're just confused.
Luckily, I was trapping for the owner of the store and he told the young ones that I was part of his family and if he heard one more word out of them, they wasn't welcome back. So I never had any more issues.
Well, let me give you a little bit of advice here. Chip has just bought property in what they call the hills of Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
So if he invites you to go trapping at his place where he just building his house, you're going to be in the same situation.
So, yes, sir. It's just up the road about 40 miles straight north of where I was camped at.
You tell him you want to go to where they plant stuff.
You want to go, if you're going to trap in Mississippi, go to the Delta and get around them peanut circles. You can just slaughter the coyotes there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes.
Or if you can find the cattle feed yards, which are not what we have here. Feed yards here are little pens with lots of cattle in it. They run feed trucks up and down. There are feed yards, 500 acres, cut up into about 10 different little pastures with feeders that are on wheels they carry in there. But if you can find them around there, there again, the cows will come to you. You don't have to go to them.
Right. Well, it used to be that way in the South with chicken houses, because before EPA, you know, how they get involved with everybody's business, the farmers used to take the dead chickens and just go dump them in the woods. And you talking about every cow within 50 square miles knew where those chicken houses were. It was, I mean, they were like pets after a while. Well, they've taken that part away. And I've never seen the type of feedlots you're talking about in Mississippi. But I'll keep that in mind.
Well, if you ever see just a bunch of cattle over there on 500 acres that's kind of cleared out, it can be right in the middle of the woods, but they'll clear it out and have it in ryegrass. Luckily, I found one, and I know how to speak them guys' language, so it wasn't hard for me to get permission.
I bet you did, yeah.
When I pulled up there and asked permission, we looked out there, and there was four coyotes running across the field. If anybody saw the pictures on Facebook and stuff of me on a four-wheeler with coyotes, I'd wire their feet together and wire their mouth shut with a bridle and then just strap them on the four-wheeler. I'd have six or seven coyotes hanging off that four-wheeler with me.
So you're doing the live market in Mississippi?
Yes, sir.
Okay, okay.
And for years I did it here, sending coyotes to Arkansas. I could get the health papers and all that. Everything was legal. I sent 920 coyotes one year to Arkansas.
See, I would really love to be able to talk to one of those pen owners that was going to be honest. Because the coyotes you trap in New Mexico are real coyotes.
They love my coyotes. They paid me a premium to bring them to them.
Yeah, I was wondering.
They're smaller. They run. They don't turn and fight. Every coyote out here is always running from a rancher and his dog, or we got a lot of greyhound hunters. So the coyotes you're catching have done outrun a greyhound. They know to run to get away.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I knew there had to be a difference. I mean, like, well, see, how can I say this? There may have been, from somebody that, I don't know who it was, may have sent some Tennessee Mountain coyotes down to Mississippi, and they never wanted to see them again.
I bet not. Them old big bristleback things just stand up and fight.
Yeah,
get killed or whoop a bunch of dogs, one or two.
Yeah, yeah. And then that made me, because I could tell a difference between the temperament of Mississippi to Tennessee, which is strange. I mean, our states touch, you know, but maybe the mountains has something to do with it. I really don't know. But then when I go out,
I think my genetics from here, not just mine, but all the coyotes that have come from the west into them states have, because you can catch five different looking coyotes in the same spot in Mississippi. You can catch a coyote that looks like he just come straight out of the west, and then you can catch one of them old big bristly looking black colored, I don't know what they are. German Shepherds is what I call them.
Now, have you ever in New Mexico heard a coyote bark like a dog? Not yip, but bark.
I had one coyote last year that I caught, and he had white front feet. So that tells me he had dog in him. His nose was a little longer. His head was a little blockier. And he straight up stood up and barked at and growled at me just like my red heeler would.
Okay. You see, in Texas, I've never seen that. But here, it's normal.
That's because it's either wolf or dog. I don't know what y'all got in them, but y'all got something in them. Because so, they're not normal.
Well, they're definitely not real coyotes. I mean, anybody that's ever been around real coyotes, I mean, in I mean, they're just different. I mean, the way they work a set seems to be different. They're like when I was doing the night vision stuff down in Texas, I had all kind of southern coyotes on film. I never ever got good footage of a Texas coyote on film. They were so wired tight to their environment, and they were so phobic. I would catch them like looking over a cactus at the camera, you know, and stuff. But I mean, their intuition was just off the charts compared to here.
Right. Well, I think it just goes to they're not around that many humans. They see one guy running the ranch feeding 3 times a week, or, you know, 1 week out of the year, a bunch of cowboys show up hooting and hollering, gathering cattle, and they go to the hills for that week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you got to remember when you go on these little big ranches. And we have a once a calendar day check law. It's going to be a little slow the first little bit because they're not used to somebody being on that road every day.
Right.
So there again, when you go in there and kind of pre-scout, if you can do it 3 or 4 days in a row, just run around and look, and it'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not all that way, but if you got one of them old gnarly tooth big dogs and females, they're not used to seeing people. It's going to take you a while to catch them.
So, to go back to the mountain lion thing, if someone is interested in coming out for a chance for mountain lions, how do they get in contact with you? What time of year? I mean, I'm giving you a chance to do your Super Casey infomercial right now.
Okay, I hate to make it a commercial, but I guess that's the way we're going to have to do it. I'm going to do a week, 6 days. Come in on a Friday and leave on a Friday. You get to keep what you catch. So if you come out and make a hand, we're going to be in good bobcat country. I averaged 248 on my cats last year and 40 on my coat. So you can pay for part of your trip that way.
Okay.
You'll have to buy your out of non-resident trapping license and the non-resident lion license if you're interested in catching the lion. And then some guys want to try for 2 weeks. That way they got a better chance of a lion, and I set up a package for that. And then I've got a package set up for guys that just want to come for 3 days and get coyote bobcat instructions.
Okay.
I've got a bunkhouse with 3 bedrooms in it. It's good bass, and not the nicest thing in the world, but it's sure not near as bad as some of the stuff I've stayed in. You got satellite TV and internet and everything else in this one.
That's awesome. So for someone to know, where are you located in the state of New Mexico?
Melrose, New Mexico.
Okay, what's around that for a reference?
Clovis, New Mexico is the biggest town next to me, and I'm 90 miles from Amarillo, Texas, and 90 miles from Lubbock, Texas. So if guys want to fly in, they'll fly in to either Amarillo or Lubbock, and we'll pick them up.
Okay. And to get the license, is that something they do online, or do they need to go into an office?
Nope, just New Mexico Game and Fish, and you can buy all the licenses right online.
Okay. Now, you said that your female companion can cook some mean Mexican. Are you going to promise at least one good homemade Mexican meal to these guys?
I am. She's going to cook you enchiladas at least once. My wife's a school teacher, so when I've got students here, I've got a little Mexican gal hired that can really cook Mexican food, so you'll get a good meal every night.
That's cool.
Breakfast and lunch, you're going to be eating with me, so you might lose a few pounds.
So someone's flying in, though, Casey, just so people know, you have equipment that they can use?
I've got all the gear they need, everything they need.
Okay. And you're going to be using my lure, right?
Yeah. You bet.
Now, don't lie on us now.
I'm not big into commercializing stuff. They use whatever lure they want. If they want to bring their own.
I'm just screwing with you, man. I'm just screwing.
Yes, sir. I understand, but I'm just saying I'm not forcing my lure on anybody. If they want to use it, it'll be there, and it won't cost them a thing to use it while they're with me. But if they want to use Cat Collector, then they might find that I got a bottle of it in my bucket, too.
Well, any last words of wisdom from the ex-rodeo cowboy trapper?
No. I go back to just have fun. That's what you used to have to tell yourself riding bulls, too. You're here to have fun. The money's great and all that. The girls dig it, but this is something that's fun, and that's what trapping should be, too. Even when you're burnt out and tired, you got to remember, I'm doing this because it's fun and I love doing it.
Amen. Well, all right, brother. I appreciate you talking to us now. You got something else?
To get in contact with me, my email is Casey, C-A-S-E-Y. 575-575@gmail.com.
Okay, say it one more time just in case someone's got to stop it.
It's Casey, 575-575@gmail.com.
Okay. And you check out pretty regular?
Yes, sir. It'll pop right up on this new fancy phone we got. I'm a high-tech cowboy now, by jelly.
So you can even take pictures of them, put them on Facebook as they catch your line, right?
You betcha, sure can. Yeah, we're high-tech cowboy now.
All right. Well, I've been talking to my wife, man, and I think we might be able to pull something off so I can get out there. That package just seems too good to pass up.
Yes, sir. Can't wait to have you.
Well, all righty, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. We'll talk at you later.
All right.